Al, you decided to read a book.
I can read a book.
You, I mean, yes, obviously. I would hope you were able to read a book.
I mean, I have read a book or two in my lifetime, but
just a
this
one
is
or
a
two.
particular book that I read. One or two. I may have actually written a book before in my life.
It's true. You,
Would be kind of
also not
wild if I could
wrong.
write a book but not read a book.
That would be pretty.
I didn't write this one though.
No.
Ew, impressive. Oh, damn.
No, not that. Shush. How dare you?
Me?
You.
Me?
You.
What did I do?
You know what you did.
What did I do?
Anyways, hello, welcome to this week's episode of Season Labor Checkup OVA. It's a podcast where we have conversations about video games, anime, and manga. Hello, I'm Jared, joined as always by Doc Allen, Lady
Hello.
This is episode 383, and Al read a book from the Final Fantasy.
Seven.
Remake.
Specifically, remake. Not remake.
Yes, you read Final Fantasy VII Remake, Trace of Two Pasts.
It's about the girlies.
A book that came out in July of 2021 in Japan, and in March of 2023 in English. So this shouldn't have, like, rebirth spoilers in it.
No.
Because that would be pretty wild to do a year before the game came out.
I mean, it has stuff that shows up in Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stories are told, Tifa's is told between, like, the grasslands, the Chocobo Farm, and the mines,
mm-hmm.
which are obviously all in Rebirth. And then Aerith's is told on the boat from Junon to Costa del Sol, which is also in Rebirth.
Also, like, it's stuff that's in Rebirth also, but also, like, you know, you can also just take a look and be like, oh, it's baseline Final Fantasy VII as well.
Correct. Yeah. So, like, it's stuff that you know is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but you're not getting any, like, deep, deep spoilers on Rebirth in this book.
It's just like, hey,
I think the only thing that could really
traveling.
Be considered we're traveling. We're going a little bit further in depth with the girlies. There's only one thing that I think could be maybe a minor spoiler for Rebirth, but you wouldn't know it's a spoiler for Rebirth unless you'd played Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a trial that happens, and they just have it written out in novel form.
Nahone.
Nahone. You probably know which one I'm talking about just based on that, but maybe. So anyway, you can listen to this podcast and not feel like you're going to get spoiled.
Yay.
Horribly with the Rebirth. And they do market it as a remake book.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense. But yeah, it's a book. And it gives you some backstory on the girls, specifically Aerith and Tifa, that we have only gotten like bits and pieces of before. So it gives us more in-depth versions of them. Also introduces one weird plot hole, I guess, or inconsistency.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing. But we were talking earlier about how one Nojima, he sure is a guy, and when he hits, he hits.
He is the author of this book.
He is the author of the book. Yeah, I guess we should clarify why I'm even bringing this man up. Yeah, when he hits, he hits. When he does not hit, he very much does not hit.
Yes.
Nojima,
for those unaware, is, you know, one of the main writers at Square. He was, you know, scenario writer for for Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, Final Fantasy X and X-2. He was the main scenario writer for Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, you know, everyone's favorite featured film. Crisis Core.
He wrote Regular Guy Sephiroth.
He did. He came up with the scenario concept for Final Fantasy XIII. He wrote that bad Final Fantasy X book. He wrote that Turks book for Final Fantasy VII. He was the original story plot creator for Final Fantasy XV. Is there another book that they did or something else?
Did you do On the Way to a Smile? Because he wrote that as a Final Fantasy VII book.
Well, sure, there's that as well.
Okay.
He was the
story and scenario
writer for Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin. Then also, obviously, with Ever Crisis, and then the Final Fantasy VII Remake project.
Mm-hmm.
So, mostly it seems like, hey, you give this guy people to work with, you know, things are fine. You let this guy be by himself, things go off the rails real quick.
Yeah. And I think that he had some, like, group effort material here to work with. So it doesn't go completely off the rails, which is good.
Maybe he learned his lesson from the Final Fantasy X book.
God, you would hope so, because that did not get a good reception.
No.
But yeah, this is one of his, or he's just like 400 pages almost of backstory for Tifa and Aerith. And it starts with Tifa and then shifts to Aerith and then it does a coda.
Mm-hmm.
So there's technically three parts of the book, but the coda is also related to Aerith. And my biggest sadness of this is that there's a picture of Aerith's art in here, but it's black and white and it's so small and I can't make out any details. And so I went looking for it and I'm like, I still can't see anything. So, unclear what's happening there, but I will say, like, right out the gate, it was fine. This may just be who I am as a person, but I enjoyed the Aerith part better than I liked the Tifa part.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fine. It filled in some gaps. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. In particular, like, the section between, well, for both of them, we have some big gaps that are missing. But for Tifa, it's the section between basically getting surgery and healing from the wound from the Nibelheim reactor situation and getting Seventh Heaven and the start of the game and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then for Aerith, you get the backstory of, like, how she came to be with Elmira and, like, their life together until Aerith is, like, 13-ish. So 7 to 13. And that was interesting. I was like, oh, hey, this is something I didn't know about at all. And, like, kind of seeing, like, the growing pains of Elmira having to, like, adopt this child, and also, wow, she's a magical girl. So that was fun. It was nice to see them, like, talking to each other, and it was cool to see, like, how Tifa and Barret interacted, and, like, Tifa meeting with Jesse and eventually Biggs and Wedge. Tifa kicks a boy in the face, which is pretty cool.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But also, like, it really drives home something that has been brought up in the games, but, like, people tend to brush over, which is that Cloud and Tifa were not friends. Like, there were basically like five people their age in that town, and the four of them hung out, and they called themselves the Four Fiends, and then they excluded Cloud from everything. So I was like, okay, well, this whole like childhood friends thing that people always say is not accurate. No wonder Cloud turned out to be a weirdo. He was like bullied and ostracized his entire life. The only love he ever got was from Zach. You'd probably turn out to be a weirdo if Zach's the only person who ever gives you any positive attention to.
Oh boy.
Well, and your mom.
Me, Gungaga.
Really. Me, Gungaga. Yeah, they go a little bit more in depth in how like Cloud was really a non-entity in her life. Like there's the whole bridge incident that was a big deal, and then leads to like Cloud and his mom being like ostracized by the entire town. Even though Cloud had nothing to do with it, Cloud took the blame. And then like the water tower thing happens, and she's like, I might be in love with this guy. It's like, you what? Huh? What do you mean? But she's 13 and she's 12 at that point. And she just decides at the water tower, like, hey, I'm just gonna make this stuff up about like I want you to be a hero and come save me, and also like decides right then and there that she like loves him. And I was like, you haven't talked to him since you were like 8.
You know, normal 12-year-old things.
I mean, that is the thing, is it is a very 12-year-old thing. I just think that would maybe not stick around that long. But I think the cool stuff about the Tifa side is that, one, you get to learn about her cat Fluffy, mm-hmm. and like her adopting that cat, and that she didn't want it to be named Fluffy, but the cat went missing and everybody was looking for Fluffy, and she's like, well, now that's the name, it's stuck, everybody knows it as Fluffy. So she did not want to name the cat Fluffy, but Fluffy exists. Also, she talks about like how Nibelheim is very conservative, and how she was raised basically like she's going to be a wife and a mother and a homemaker, and like that's it. And the rest of her friends basically like know that. And once they start hitting an age, they're all like, oh, Tifa, you're going to be my wife.
My wife.
And they all decide that, which is a problem when, you know, three boys all decide that you're going to be the wife. But then they go and enlist in the military. So everybody leaves her and she gets sad. Now she's by herself. But you get to learn more about like her training with, what's his name? Zangan? Mm-hmm. Zangan? Zangan? The dude.
The dude.
The dude. And so she's basically like learning from him whenever he shows up. Thinks he's a child trafficker at first. Trafficker? That's the word I'm looking for. But he like keeps giving the manuals every time he visits, and she starts teaching like old people exercise routines for money. And then her dad helps her train, and she gets tough. And then the Nibelheim reactor situation happens, and oops. Well, then, also, side note on that is that one of the like town ladies, like her daughter moved away or whatever, and like gave Tifa a box of clothes. And the day of the Nibelheim reactor incident thing, She was like, "Oh, I'm gonna go through this box of clothes. See what I found. Ooh, look at this cool vest and this cool cowboy hat and this skirt. Yeehaw. I'm gonna wear this." I was like, "Oh man, Tifa's wearing a hand-me-down cowgirl outfit. Incredible." So yeah, if anybody's played Final Fantasy VII, you know how Nibelheim reactor situation goes down. And so she ends up in, well, first she's taken to the surgeon in Corel, who basically like reconstructs her sternum. And then she ends up doing like a bunch of skin grafts in Sector 8 in Midgar. Like they moved her and did some skin grafts. Here's the plot hole I was talking about. The scar that they describe in the book, which Nojima wrote this book, and he wrote, you know, parts of Final Fantasy VII, so he should know what is going on here. But the scar that they describe is diagonal from like the top of one of her boobs to like diagonal across the sternum underneath the other one. And apparently it's like pretty gnarly looking. The skin grafts are supposed to help, but like it's apparently a pretty gnarly one that just think about like Squall's facial scar,
mm-hmm.
but across some boobas.
Nice.
Yeah. which is definitely not how they treat it in Rebirth.
No.
They're like, I can lift up my shirt just a little bit and you can see the scar, the whole scar, and it's apparently horizontal now. I'm like, oh, huh. Okay, well, that's different. So I don't know if he forgot how he wrote the scar or if they just had to like rewrite it for convenience or what ended up happening there. I told you, I think I have a theory, which is they're just like, hey, we don't want to have Scar Booba in the bikini.
Yeah.
That was my thought. Which, like, it would have been pretty cool, in my opinion, but it's just my opinion. So anyway, she gets skin grafts. And then, like, the rest of her story is basically, like, the doctor says that she has, like, a massive, massive debt to pay this off. And the doctor's son, his name, Rakesh. He's basically like, okay, hey, I'll set you up. Like, you get to live in this like container. It's basically like a shipping container that they've made into like a studio apartment. You have to live here, and you have to work at a certain job that I found for you, and you know, you'll eventually pay it off. And she did the math, and it was like many, many years in the future, and she can't leave that apartment, and it's really stressful. And so she works at like the food cart bun thing that you see in Ever Crisis, where she's making the food buns,
mm-hmm.
Which is where she meets Jesse. Actually, she meets Wedge first, and he's like, I'm hungry and I want 22 of these dang things, and only 2 of them are for those guys and the 20 are for me. So yeah, she's working for a man named Pops. And he wants her to make lots of buns and basically is telling her like, hey, you'll sell a lot of them because you're cute. And she feels bad about that. But that is the case. So she sells the buns. She practices her martial arts. She survives. And then eventually she... like hangs out with Jesse a few times, goes to some planetology screenings for her birthday. Jesse ends up getting injured at one point and is like, I gotta stay away from you because it's gonna mess you up. Shinra Soldier gets his throat slit at one point, which is wild. Oops. Not by her, but just in front of her, and it freaks her out. And then I don't remember how they pronounce her name in Remake, but I always wanted to call her Marley because that's how I pronounce the gal from Chrono Trigger. But anyway, the lady who is Cloud's landlord in Remake.
Yes.
Old lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, like, she gets the same skin graft things as Tifa, and they meet up, they talk it out, and then Tifa starts working like one day a week at the at Seventh Heaven with this feller, this old man named Monty. Monty's like, man, it's so nice to have somebody around here, and like, you're a cutie, and so you can sell stuff. This is great. My arm's all messed up, so I can't really do the cocktails anymore. And so she's finally excited about like going to work. And then she goes to Seventh Heaven a few times, and then like, there's this homeless man sitting outside and scaring people. He has a small child with him. She's two. It's Barrett. It's Marlene. And Tifa basically is like, bro, she has dandruff. She has one outfit. It's dirty. You didn't brush her hair. Where are y'all even sleeping? Like, get it together, my guy. And he's like, I'm looking for Jesse. Long story short on this is that like Monty ends up letting him move into like the secret studio apartment that he has in the basement. Wow, we saw that in Final Fantasy VII. And so that's where him and Marlene live, and he gets clean and gets her a new outfit, and he starts working as a bouncer for Seventh Heaven, which I didn't realize that was what he was doing. I didn't realize he had a career outside of being the leader of Avalanche. But apparently he's the bouncer at Seventh Heaven. Which, I mean, it makes sense. Like, he's a beast of a man.
He's a
Like,
big
you want a
boy.
bouncer. This is a good guy to have as a bouncer. Monty dies. Ripperoni pepperoni. And they find out, like, oh, well, you know, he's behind on payment, but if we could pay like 160,000 gil, then Seventh Heaven is ours. And Tifa's like, well, I've been saving money and it's underneath my bed. Let me go see how much I got. Maybe we can do this. And so she goes to find it, and oh no, that guy, the dude from the doctor, what's his freaking Rakesh? He took her money. Because he's trying to keep her under his thumb. And also, he's been stealing a huge chunk of her money and going, like, betting on chocobo stuff. And oh no, like, the guy who's been basically, like, the Corneo of this sector is Pops this whole time. Whoa. They've been conspiring together to keep Tifa under their thumb. Oh no. And Rakesh is like, I did all this because I'm in love with you, Tifa. And Tifa like drop kicks him in the nose, and it's pretty rad. And then takes her money back and buys Seventh Heaven. Becomes the bartender. Good for her. She moves out of the container. Also, her and Jesse like meet up, and Jesse's lamenting how like nothing's been moving forward, and Barrett like shoots some Shinra soldiers who are after them. He's like, hey, they had a machine gun, but I got them. It's all good. I got it.
I did the thing.
I did the thing. And Jesse's like, you know, we're kind of a democracy. Everybody votes, but like nothing can move forward with Avalanche. And Barrett's like, all right, well, how about this? I'm your leader now. I'll make decisions. This isn't a democracy anymore. I got this. Jesse's like, you know what? Hadn't worked so far, so why don't we try something new? You're the leader. Let's go. So that's basically how it goes. And Tifa's debt is like wiped out. So she now owns Seventh Heaven, and Barrett is her bouncer and lives in the basement. And he is now the leader of Avalanche.
Yay.
Yay. So that's how that goes down. The coolest thing was her, like, beating the shit out of that guy is pretty cool. And then Aerith's is more heartbreaking, honestly, because it starts off with like she's on the boat with Tifa explaining the whole like situation of how she was like raised in the Shinra building, which we knew all that, but So it basically talks about like how they escaped. There was a man, a big old man. I forget his name. Faz helps them escape. He basically is like, "Hey, I'm gonna trigger like a monster escape situation. Like, y'all hide out in my cleaning bucket, and I'll roll you out, and then I'll put you in a truck and put you in a shipping container, and then the truck will take you to the train. You take the train and the shipping container, and then you get out of the shipping container and you get off at this stop and you talk to this gal, and then she'll tell you where to go to get to Sector 3, and I've got a house rented for you, and you're free. You're good. Here's some money also." So all that goes down. But it also mentions like Aerith's mom has been in like really bad shape and is basically surviving entirely off of like syringe painkillers. Yikes. And so they do all that. They get through all the shenanigans. They get off the train, and instead of going to Sector 3, they go to Sector 5, and basically, Ilfana's like, "Hey, I want to take you to this church. I've heard about this church, and I feel like that's a good place for us to go. Like, I don't want us to go to Faz's place. Like, we're gonna go elsewhere." But as you are well aware, once we get to the train station, things happen that are not good. And it's in the original game. This is where Ilfana dies. But we get more of the backstory. We get some of this in Rebirth as well. And Elmira shows up and is looking for her husband at the train station and runs into this whole situation. Is like, Ilfana is basically like in and out of existence. And Aerith is talking to her and trying to like get her to come around and be fine. And then like Ilfana grabs a hold of Elmira, like with all of her strength, is basically like, "Take care of Aerith," and then dies.
Good.
Blech. And so Elmira is like, "Okay, well, that seemed pretty clear. Let's go. Well, I'm sorry you don't get to mourn your mom, but we gotta go." So she basically just like picks up Aerith and is like, "All right, let's go." And then she asks Aerith, like, "Hey, are you sad?" And she's like, "No, my mom's still with me. It's fine. I'm all good." Also, this is where she gets the materia from her mom, was like right as she was dying. Aerith is 7 at this point, which I didn't realize Aerith was 7, but it goes to the whole thing of like, "Hey, we're gonna go back to her house," because they're trying to figure out like how's this whole situation gonna work. She keeps Aerith on the second floor of the house for a while, and then she ends up feeling really bad. She's like, "I'm basically doing the same thing to you that Shinra did by keeping you like locked away." Which I mean is a really good point that she's like, you're going from one situation where you're locked away to another. It's just you're not going to get experimented on. So she wants Aerith to have some degree of freedom of movement. You also find out like what the Gainsboroughs are all about. Like basically, Elmira's father-in-law is like an underworld boss for Sector 5. So also kind of a Corneo situation, but like not as terrible. And her husband Clay was going to like inherit it when he died, but then Clay like enlisted in the army to try and like make people think he's just like a regular guy, I guess. So, that's an interesting choice, I suppose. But anyway, so the Gainsboroughs are basically like weird mob bosses, and I didn't realize that like Elmira was part of that. It was like, Aerith was raised by a mob boss lady. That's kind of cool. So anyway, like you get a lot of the like politics of that throughout this, which is pretty neat. Ifana shows up like every night to Aerith and is like checking on her and saying hi and all that, which is really nice. You also find out that like there are these dudes in the pyramid that are related to the whole system of like the Gainsborough organization, I guess. And so they wanted to have Aerith go by a fake name so that she would be safe and could walk around. Aerith had been told about one of the like underboss's daughters, and she that was the first name she could think of when somebody asked her name, so she kind of stole that girl's name. Oops. And Elmira was like, oh God, we should have talked about the name before anybody came by. Oops. Oh well. Well, I guess this is your name now. So she goes by Rana for a while. And she gets to hang out with the kids at the orphanage. Because if you remember from Remake, the orphanage is like right by the Gainsborough house.
Yeah.
And then we get the whole vision of Aerith realizes like Elmira's husband's dead, which is pretty wild. How they describe it in this, it's basically like she sees him like as she's by the like garden, but he like walks in and he like blinks a lot, like he's in disbelief, and then he like lays down on the ground and dies like in the house. And so basically Aerith was like, yeah, like his soul was trying to like return home and get back to you, but you know he's dead. And Elmira obviously is very hurt by this because that's a lot to deal with, but this is also where she starts realizing, like, oh, Aerith is different. Huh. But once she gets the like a letter from Shinra saying that Clay's dead, she basically like believes Aerith and decides, like, okay, you know, Aerith is my responsibility. Like I'm definitely dedicated to being her mom now. Like I don't have anything else. I'm gonna be Aerith's mom. But then the underboss man brings his kids. Oh no, this is a problem because there are two Ranas now. Also, there's a little kid named Marcellus, which is a stupid name. And Marcellus starts like bullying Aerith and being like, "You stole my sister's name and you suck," and blah 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 blah. And some kids from the orphanage start beating this dude up, including a boy named X.
DMX.
His name is X. And so they beat up Marcellus for making fun of Aerith, and you know, Aerith apologizes because she's like, I did steal the name, but I didn't mean to. And then there's like an aside between Tifa and Aerith in present day where they realize that X is Biggs. I was like, huh, what? So apparently X, the kid who was beating up people, was Biggs. So she did meet Biggs, she just didn't realize it. But he arrived at the orphanage, he didn't have a name, so they called him X, and he's like, ah, that's fine. I kinda like it. And then eventually when he became an adult, he picked his own name, which is Biggs. Anyway. So then there ends up being like power struggle stuff with the family business, blah, 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 blah. And then Song shows up. And Aerith panics because she's like, oh God, it's a Turk. Like, I can't deal with this. Also, she's 8 years old at this point. Which, if we do
I don't wanna.
the mathematics, do you know how old Song is at this point?
Too old.
He's not. He is 16 years old.
It's too old.
Working as a Turk. And Elmira makes fun of him. He's like, what, they send interns now? I was like, damn, got him. But yeah, he's only 8 years older than Aerith. And so it's like, wait a minute, she's eight. That makes him 16 years old. And basically, like, Aerith runs upstairs and is hiding and is freaked out. And Elmira negotiates with Song and is basically like, okay, look, I'll keep an eye on her and you know, I'll watch for any signs of her being an ancient. And then, you know, in exchange, you protect us and don't harass her because she's a small child and that's rude. And Song agrees to it. Because as you can tell from like how they've expanded his character, Song's not a bad guy, really. He has a bad job. He's really dedicated to a bad job. But I mean, if you've been doing this since you're probably even before you were 16, like, it's all you really know. But I do think he genuinely cares about Aerith, and that comes up a bit later. But anyway, Song shows up. They're like, well, I guess we don't need a fake name anymore. You can just be Aerith again because they know you're here. So she goes by Aerith again. Ends up being more power struggle-y stuff. Whoa, this is bad. Oh, no. During all this power struggle, like, Marcellus ends up going missing. And Aerith, again, goes down by the flowers at the house and has, like, a vision of where Marcellus is. And he's, like, in Sector 6 and has been attacked by a monster and is bleeding out. And so she tells Elmira and they go and find him. And everybody's kind of suspicious of, like, how did Elmira know this? Like, did she, like, try and put a hit out on this kid? Or, like, what happened? And eventually Aerith is like, no, it was me. I figured it out. Wee. So yeah. At this point, because of all these power struggles, Elmira is like, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. Like, I'm going to sign a thing with my fingerprint and blood and say, I am out of this business. I'm going to give it all to you guys. I'm out. I'm done. So yeah, now everybody's like helping Elmira out with jobs so that she can actually like feed the two. And then at 13, Aerith starts working at the orphanage as like an assistant. And she's like, basically my job is like play with the kids and that's it. And this doesn't really feel like a job. But at this point she finds out, oh, hey, there was a turf war. And the reason why she has to stay close to home is because, like, her part of the area is, like, the safe zone because they're protecting her. And the Turks also kind of keep that up. She gets real mad because she's like, you know, I'm still caged even though you basically tried to pretend that I wasn't. And so she ends up running away. Again, she's 13. So, like, happens. And as she starts running away, she's headed to the church because she remembers the church was what her mom wanted her to go to. And she ends up running into Foz, the man who tried to help them escape. And he's basically like, oh, well, I'll tell you where the church is. And they're like a bunch of dead monsters around, which is weird. And Aerith's like, huh, I wonder where these monsters are getting killed. Like, how's that happening? But then they get to the church and he starts being a creeper and is basically like trying to replace Aerith. And it reveals like, oh, he was in love with Elfana and like thinks that Aerith is Elfana in his head. And again, Aerith is 13. So he's like, yeah, you know, we'll live together in the house in Sector 3 and we'll be together forever and you're my beloved and blah, 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 blah. And Aerith is like, no. Bonks him in the head with a suitcase. You know, as you do. Mm-hmm. And then she starts trying to get out of there and Foz is blocking her and the door opens and Elmira shows up with a broom and just like whacks the shit out of Foz until she breaks the broom in half. And then it doesn't stop him. Elmira is still trying to protect Aerith, ends up pulling out a gun and shoots at him, but misses every single shot. And then they're panicking, and then wow, magically he gets shot. Wow, somebody shot him, and it was a good shot. And then they get away, and Aerith looks up and she's like, "Oh, there's a black suit. Interesting. Thanks, Song." She goes back with Elmira. Elmira's basically like, "Yeah, we're gonna have to talk about this, but you're my kid. You're staying with me. I'm gonna protect you." Also, seems like your restricted zone's gonna go all the way through Sector 5, so you can go to this church a lot now. Yay!
Yay.
Yay! The coda is really weird in that it's basically like a kid who was hired by Shinra to be friends with Aerith when she was a kid. When she was like part of Shinra, like she was under their, she was kidnapped by them. I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. She was their experiment, I
She was
guess.
held hostage.
That word, yes. And so like the whole thing is basically like that kid is now an adult and is having a lot of like guilt issues and struggling, and he has a gal, and they're having a baby, and like he can't stop having nightmares, and he's freaking out. So he's like, I gotta like settle shit, figure it all out. So he starts like tracing this man to try and figure out like the history of what was going on here. And so there's this whole situation with like a special geological survey initiative, I think is what it's called. And Lonnie is the main character. And essentially, he like traces through this whole story of like there's this man who ended up in Medill, which is a town in Final Fantasy VII. And he had Mako poisoning and ended up having like an ankle injury. And he's trying to figure out like who the heck is this guy, because he's going by a different name, but he's this like lab assistant that he's looking for, that he always talked with when he was, I think he said he's a year older than Aerith, so he was 8 while Aerith was 7 when they were friends. So he's looking for this guy. He ends up like finding some other people along the way, one of which is like, "Hey, yeah, I know this guy. He is part of my friend group. I had some friends that we were gonna be a part of this geological survey because they promised that Shinra promised a lot of money." But the weird thing is like all the missions were just pictures of paintings. And I don't know where the Turks were getting these painting pictures, but like that's where we're supposed to go to try and find like Mako, and people are gonna pay a lot if you could find the Mako based on the paintings. And like there's a huge rate of people dying doing this. But two people signed up to do it, and one of them, well, okay, so there's four people total here. Two people signed up. One of the other ones is the lab assistant, and then another lady is a Shinra soldier, but she didn't sign up, and she is in love with one of the ones who did sign up and is very sad about it. And basically, three of the four end up with Mako poisoning because somebody put it in a casserole. Yes.
Don't
And
put Mako
so
in your casserole.
don't put Mako in your casserole. And so the dude, and I'm blanking on his name. Getty. Getty is the guy who is the lab assistant. Glenn, but not the Glenn you know, is one of the guys who signed up. Lalisa is someone who didn't sign up, but she was in Shinra, and then Joanne is the other person who signed up. Those are the four. Lalisa was in love with Glenn. She didn't want him to go, so she was begging him, like, "Hey, don't do this." And so Getty survived the Mako poisoning casserole and was like, "Oh, well, Lisa must have poisoned it so that he wouldn't go." Wow, that's so messed up. And then it turns out, obviously, that Getty was the one who poisoned everybody with the Mako in the food. And he ended up like stealing Glenn's bag and ran off with a separate painting and paid the helicopter man extra money to take him to Medill instead of to Cosmo Canyon. And you find out through the story that essentially Aerith had been making these like elaborate paintings, and Shinra had been like taking pictures of her paintings and sending troops out to try and find like Mako spots based on her paintings. But then she ran out of like, I guess, ancient energy. Like, she stopped getting inspiration, and so she couldn't paint anymore. And they were like abusing her and starving her and all that. And basically, they brought in Lonnie to be like, hey, get her to paint again. And so he told her, okay, just, do what I tell you to do. And then we'll say, that's the last thing that you're able to get. You're out of it. Energy, you can't do it anymore. Like, just listen to what I'm saying. So he describes a picture of Medill from like a travel catalog for her to paint. And so that ends up being the last thing. And Getty pockets that because he thinks that that's going to be like the spot for Mako, even though like he doesn't realize that Lonnie had basically just fed this whole painting to Aerith to get people off her case. And so Lonnie's been feeling really terrible about this whole situation, and that now I feel it's even worse because it's like, oh well, I basically like ruined the lives of four people by doing that. But then Joanne tells Lonnie as an adult, like he's in his 20s at this point, I think. Yeah, he had to be because Aerith is 22, so he'd be 23. She's basically like, hey, Lonnie, come with me. We're gonna go down to this train graveyard and follow this gal, because turns out none of them are actually dead. They're all just black robes, and they all have tattoos. And wow, Shinra's been experimenting on people who have Mako poisoning. Wow.
They would never do that.
They would never do that, right? So she's like, it's a situation like they're alive, but they're not really alive, and there's some kind of positive in that, I guess, that they're still around. But yeah, everybody kind of gets closure from this whole situation. And then Lonnie finds out like there is a girl that's been hanging out in a plaza selling flowers, and it turns out that she goes by the name Aerith. So he goes there and basically goes in and apologizes to her, like goes on this huge thing about like, I'm so sorry, I've ruined your life. This is terrible. I feel really bad. And she's like, I don't know who you're talking about. I think you have the wrong person. I gotta go. He's like, yeah, I guess I have the wrong person. Starts like walking off, and then he turns around and looks at her, and she like pulls a face that she made at him when they were kids, and he ends up like being all resolved, like everything's fine now, yay. And you're like,
Yay.
everything's fine, but like, I'm glad you feel better, Lonnie. Good for you, kid. So anyway, that's how it wraps up. It's a book. It's
It's a
like,
book.
what did I say, 400 pages? I think it's 372 pages. So yeah, it was nice to get some backstory. I can't believe that like the Gainsboroughs are crime bosses. That's pretty wild. Did you know
I did not know that.
that? And so like it explains why they had such a nice house, even though it was in the slums.
Yeah.
And also like an interesting point that was brought up with the Aerith stories was that like every time she would get any kind of vision outside of like Shinra Tower, was when she was around the flowers, which it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. Makes sense. But like she said, there's just something different about being around the flowers. Also, song Kill a Guy. Just casually.
Yeah, as you do.
I mean, he was older at that point, right? Because she was 13. What's the math? He would have been 21.
Sure.
Is that right?
That could be math. You're right.
Well, because if she were 12 and it's 8 years, he'd be 20. And so if she's 13, then he's 21. That's the weirdest way to do math, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
Sure is one way to do math, you're right.
But yeah, so I don't regret reading it. It's much better than the ones that are tied to Advent Children because they're tied to Advent Children. Blech.
No one wants that.
No. It's wild being on Twitter these days where people talking about how good Advent Children is. I'm like, huh?
Ooh.
Have y'all rewatched that movie lately? Because, not good. And they're like, I want a playable version of Advent Children. The third game is like, no, you don't. No, you don't. Nobody wants that. Just say you want to ride the motorcycle and go.
Vroom, vroom.
Vroom, vroom. Anyway, that's the book. I read a book.
Good job. You read.
I read a book and I only had one minor casualty with the book because at one point, it was Maxwell who broke my water bottle and it leaked all over the book. So some of my back pages are a little warped,
Yeah.
but they're all right. I had to throw away like the slip cover for it, but the cover still looks nice, so no big deal.
Well, there you go.
But a year later, I finished it.
It just took you a little bit.
I only started reading it in earnest after we finished Rebirth. And then I like really, really finished it basically like this week.
It's today.
Well, yeah, I finished reading it. I read over 100 pages today in this.
Look at you.
Look at me, I can read.
You can read.
Reading is fundamental.
But yeah, that's a book.
It's a book.
It's a bunch of backstory.
Bunch of backstory. Some of it that doesn't match up with the games, but that's fine. But yeah. I wonder. I know that there's a short story that he wrote, like from Cloud's perspective, after enlistment. But it hasn't been translated yet, so I wonder if we'll get that at some point. But that was something that came out with Rebirth. I imagine that based on the turnaround time for this one, you said 2021 to 2023,
Yes.
that it'll be a couple of years before we get the Cloud one, if we get it at all. But I would read that. I mean, it's better than the Final Fantasy 10 2.5.
Mean, to be fair, it wouldn't be that hard to make it better.
It wouldn't be hard to make it better.
True. But yeah. That is Final Fantasy VII Remake Trace of Two Paths. And that's going to do it for us this week.
Yay!
So if you like more from us, head on over to seasonalanimecheckup.com or sec.coolest, where you can find past episodes of this podcast and other podcasts like Jared Now Watch. You can also find columns and reviews on the site as well. If you'd like more from Ann Ladium, go to annladium.com. She's got columns and reviews. You can follow us on Twitter and TikTok at Anime Checkup. You can buy our books, One Shiny Moment. Blah, blah, blah. Follow us on Blue Sky at seasonalanimecheckup.com. Buy our books, One Shiny Moment, Critical Analysis of Love, Life, Sunshine, Hot Tubs, and Pac-Man on Amazon.com. And he's supports on Patreon, patreon.com/SACOVA. Buy us a slice of pizza, get access to unedited versions of the podcast early, our monthly bonus exclusive podcast, which should probably be up around the time this podcast goes up or a little bit afterwards.
Oh, we need to do that.
We do need to do that, you're right. And a whole wealth of bonus content as well. Next week, you're gonna take us to hell.
Am I going to finish it in time?
I'd hope so.
I hope so too.
Well, if not, we'll figure out something else, but eventually you're going to take us to hell.
That's the current plan is to take, I mean, I have two more routes, so you especially with me being off on Thursday, I should maybe be able to do it.
I have faith in you to be able to knock out two routes in a week.
Yeah.
But if not, we'll come up with something else.
All right, but I would really like us to go to hell.
Yeah, so look forward to going to hell, maybe, potentially. If not this week or next week, then in 2 weeks.
Yes.